The House will come to order. The flag salute today will be led by Representative Brian Klem, who is not here. Representative Mitch Greenlick.
I pledge allegiance to the flag
of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
The opening ceremony today will be a moment of silence. Courtesies. Representative Frederick, please.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I'd like for you to extend courtesies to my students from Grant High School and the Urban League of Portland, who are sitting in the South Gallery, if you'd wave. And thank them for being here. They're here to tour the Capitol and meet with as many people as possible. I told them I want them here as often as possible, and I reminded them of the great philosopher Woody Allen, who said 85% of success is just showing up. So I want them to show up.
Thank you, Representative. Welcome to your Capitol. Further courtesies? You okay? All right. There is a group from the Rachel L. Carson Environmental Science here from Beaverton in the back. So let's wave to those folks. Good to have you here. They are the guests of Representative Chris Harker. Any further courtesies? Representative Tomei, please.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I don't see them now, but members of the Milwaukee City Council will be in the building today. So please extend courtesies to them.
Thank you, Representative. Verification of quorum. The clerk will open the voting system to determine the presence of a quorum. Timing's everything. Representative Thompson? Excused, Representative Cowan and Representative Springer. A quorum is present. Messages from the governor. Messages from the Senate.
Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the President to inform you the Senate's passed Senate Bill 1580, adopted SCR 202.
First reading, memorials and resolutions.
SCR 202, in memoriam, Mark Hatfield, 1922 to 2011.
Measure first read first time, is passed to co-speaker's desk for referral. Standing committee reports. The committee report file has been distributed. Special committee reports. Special orders of business. The clerk will read the resolution.
SCR 207, in memoriam, Gail Louise Ackerman, 1949 to 2012.
Question now arises upon final reading and adoption of SCR 207. Representative Reed, please.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Occasionally, in the course of our legislative work, I imagine each of us come into contact with someone who is quintessentially Oregon. Today, I want to introduce you to someone of just that type, and I hope you'll join with me in honoring Gail Ackerman. I'm privileged to play a small part in memorializing her here today because she was my constituent, but this is a tall order because she did a lot. Gail was a pioneer. She was a fourth-generation Oregonian with deep and broad experience in transportation issues natural resource policy, and environmental law, just to name a few. She was born in Portland, raised in Salem, and she was a scholar and an athlete. As a South Salem High School Saxon, she earned the first letter awarded to a female in swimming in Saxon history. At Stanford, she was a three-sport athlete, where she earned a bachelor's degree in economics before heading to the University of Michigan, where she earned law and master's degrees. Started her career in Washington, D.C. in the solicitor's office at the U.S. Department of Interior, where she advised the Bureau of Reclamation and the Bureau of Land Management. But after that, it was all Oregon. Came back to join what would become the Stoll Reeves Law Firm and establish what I'm told was one of the Northwest's first law practices specializing in natural resource and environmental law, and started a career of public service that that never ended with the Oregon Water Policy Review Board. Governor Goldschmidt asked Gail to be his assistant on natural resources, and for 4 years she was responsible for all manner of those policy development and implementation issues. Went back to private sector to practice law for a time, and then joined the Deschutes Resource Conservancy in Bend to develop voluntary market-based strategies for watershed restoration and enhancement. She was the first director of the Institute for Natural Resources, which brought together scientific and political expertise from our system of higher education and brought it to bear on natural resource management issues. But lately, and around here, Gail was perhaps best known as a member of the Oregon Transportation Commission. And I think it speaks to her impact there that the entire Transportation Commission has chosen to join us today in the upper gallery to honor her. Pat Egan, Dave Lehman, Mary Olson, Mark Frohnmeyer, Tammy Benny are all here. And this is where I best knew her, in the Transportation Commission role, where she was for 11 years, 4 years as chair. I was always impressed with her knowledge, her perspective, and her skill, but I want to make sure you're not taking my word for that. ODOT Director Matt Garrett had a nice summary of her work there and said that, I'm quoting, there are truly no words that can describe the impact Gail has had on this agency, the Transportation Commission, and on Oregon, as well as the national transportation debate. Her intelligence, dedication, and sacrifice is only surpassed by her humanity and caring for her fellow Oregonians. She concluded her career with something of a legacy project, Willamette Strategies, which focused on promoting a shared vision and understanding of our relationship to the Willamette Valley. The list of her service and her accomplishments is long, but I'm told she considered her most significant accomplishment, the thing she was most proud of, was her role in drafting the legislation that established the Columbia River Gorge National Scenic Area in 1981. So I hope you will think of her as I do the next time you travel through or to that special place in Oregon. Gail was an Oregonian through and through. She was an Oregon woman who was as comfortable in the halls of government as she was in the woods. And I think she's the sort of person that we would all like future Oregonians to be. Someone who had high integrity, independence, and an ability to see our history and our future. The Oregonian had it right in their editorial published just after her death on January 30th. I'll quote from that. Acherman, a lifelong Oregonian and strong environmentalist, was a rare figure in Oregon public policy circles. Someone who always seemed in the tough debates and the discussions for the right reasons, to figure things out, to find the solution, to get things done. My favorite line from this quote, she wasn't an attention seeker, and my guess is that Acherman is probably the most intelligent, most effective public servant you've never heard of, end quote. Each of us can take lessons from her example, and I hope we will. In addition to the Transportation Commission, who is here, Gail's family is here with us. And on the side aisle, I'd like to introduce them. Gail's husband, Chuck McGinnis, and her sister-in-law, Ginny Acherman. So, Mr. Speaker, colleagues, I urge your aye vote today on this resolution and hope that you'll join me in honoring Gail Acherman and thanking her family and her colleagues for sharing her with us and with the state. We are better for her. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Representative. Further discussion, Co-Speaker Roblin, please.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This is a really important one to me, and it's because of the last statement that was made by our previous, the carrier of this motion. One of the people who many of you will never know, we were at a meeting together in transportation, and I was talking about Coos Bay Railroad and also about the water board, and I came to find out that my whole service on the water board had to do with a project we were doing to build a dam. And she said, I can tell you all about that dam. And I said, what? She said, I worked on that. That was one of my major things, and they never let me come to Coos Bay, but because other people always went. And that started a relationship that ended in a number of meetings that I had to attend. And I had to say that I have never met, and I would love to be able to channel the ability that Gail had to listen to a meeting, to be involved in it, and putting her words in. At the end of a conversation, she would say, here's kind of what I heard. And not a person in the room would have to add anything after she spoke about, here's what I heard, here's where we're going to go on. She had an amazing ability to take complex issues and explain them, and to take complex conversations and boil it down to the essence of what we really had to work on. And those skills, I don't know how they will ever be replaced, but I want to say to the family and the other people here, I have never had the opportunity to work with a person who I was more both impressed and believed that the comments that were made about she was doing it for the best of Oregon than Gail. So I urge the eye support of everyone in this room, and it is in that humble recognition that there are people of greatness out there who don't care if other people know how great they are. So thank you.
Thank you. Representative Nolan, please.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and colleagues, family, colleagues in the gallery. There are many words that people can use to describe Gail, and I will not attempt to list all of them. But for me, mentor is one that is particularly important. I knew Gail and looked to her for counsel, not just on legal issues and natural resource issues, but on communication and ways of thinking about things and ways of connecting with people that have helped me over the last 15 years that I have known her. Another word that comes to mind, and the carrier mentioned both of this, that she is a scholar and an athlete. I can attest to both of them because there were many times when Gail and I, she's close to a neighbor, would run together in the morning, and I couldn't keep up with her either in my running or in the debate we would have as we'd run around the Humphrey Boulevard loop. But I learned a lot on those cold, sometimes rainy mornings listening to her. And finally, there are many of us who aspire to leading by example, but I can think of no one who did it better than Gail did. She lived her values, she lived her passion, and the city of Portland, the state of Oregon, is much better for the legacy she is leaving behind. Thank you for sharing her with us.
Thank you, Representative. Further discussion, Representative Bentz, please. Representative Bentz.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I was extraordinarily fortunate to meet Gail in 1983 when I appeared before her. She was on the Water Policy Review Board at the time, and I was representing a large ranch in eastern Oregon. She did a wonderful job. She actually ended up being the swing vote on that particular issue. About 4 years later, she interviewed me for the position I ultimately was appointed to on the Water Resource Commission. And so I enjoyed working with her over the 8 years I spent on that commission. Everything that's been said thus far understates her abilities to gather together disparate views and put people going in the right direction in complicated matters. She was an incredible part of Oregon and one that played a huge part in my life. It seems to me that we seldom recognize the value of these kind of people while they're alive. It's really unfortunate. And so it's sad that we'd be here today saying all these great things about her. She certainly deserves every word of it. I wish I would have said them earlier. The state has suffered a great loss. I'm glad the family is here so they can hear this. And I urge an aye vote.
Thank you, Representative. Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Reed, would you like to close?
Only to thank my colleagues for their kind words and the family once again. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Representative. Those who are of the opinion that the resolution should be adopted will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Before we declare the measure passed, I'd like to thank Gail's family for sharing her with our state, thank the commission for being here, and thank all of her friends who are here today as well. SCR 207, having received the required majority, is declared adopted. Propositions and motions. First reading of House bills.
House Bill 4173 relating to printing of official election ballots and declaring an emergency.
Bill read first time is passed the co-speaker's desk for referral. Second reading of House bills.
House Bill 4016 relating to harm to a child. House Bill 4027 relating to limitations on the liability of persons providing services without a compensation and declaring an emergency. House Bill 4063 relating to professional licensure of applicants with military training or experience and declaring an emergency. House Bill 4108 relating to precious material secondhand dealing. House Bill 4110 relating to investment in companies doing business in Iran and declaring an emergency. House Bill 4128 relating to treatment for craniofacial anomalies. House Bill 4146 relating to expungement and declaring an emergency.
Bills read second time are passed to third reading. Third reading of House bills. The clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 4014 relating to education and declaring an emergency.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 4014A. Representative Wingert, please.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, we're involved in a multi-year effort to try to improve our public education system, and one of the things you've heard from the governor is this concept of tight, loose, meaning that we would be tight on our accountability standards, but loose in our mandates, if you will, on exactly how the schools in our public education system go about trying to deliver on those results that we would like from them. We started a project, if you will, in the last session to begin to try to repeal some of the many state mandates that our school districts have to comply with, which to some degree lead to the large and growing administrative expense that a lot of our taxpayers and constituents complain to us about when they see that line item in their school districts. So last session we brought you a bill to, your House Education Committee brought you a bill to repeal a whole bunch of educational mandates. I was pleased to see that that got broad bipartisan support, and I asked our educational stakeholder groups to not let it end there and let's keep having a conversation about whether there are additional educational mandates that we can repeal to further reduce the administrative burden on our public school districts. And they came back with a list. It went through that legislative grinder and not everything stayed on. So we are, I expect it to be tough as we get further into the list of mandates. It gets tougher to kind of let go of the need to control every single aspect of what our districts do, but we were able to come up with a list. It's a little bit smaller this time, but we're bringing you a list of 8 additional education mandates that will be repealed in this bill a minimum, really. The fiscal statement on this is that it would reduce the burden by about $1 million. I think really it ends up being a lot more than that, because what you're getting is just the Department of Education costs that are reduced. The compliance costs on the district side are not as easy to calculate, and so they're really kind of missing from this figure. And I think you can expect that the time and financial savings to our districts is actually beyond what we can say today. So I'm hoping that you will join your House Education Committee that unanimously passed this education mandate repeal bill, and that, and again, I've asked the education stakeholder groups to not stop here, to keep going, see if we can't find more educational mandates to repeal, and I'm hoping this becomes a regular process, and that House Bill 4014 will have your support today. Thank you, colleagues.
Thank you, Representative. For the discussion, Representative Frederick, please.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I will join my colleague on the Education Committee in supporting this bill. It is a very good bill. We are continuing a process. The Department of Education looked at the issues at the request of a number of folks in this body. When I was on the State Board of Education, we asked that this kind of thing take place, and we are getting a good response from a number of people, certainly in the Education Committee. There are several parts of this bill that were initially in the bill that included information about nutrition standards and physical education. They have been taken out, so if you've been finding yourself getting lots of letters from people about that, those reports will continue to be going into the state to the Department of Education, and we'd like to have them continue to go in right now. We will continue in the Education Committee, all of us, to look at what's needed and what's going to be effective for our kids. And so I ask that you join us in supporting this bill. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative. Further discussion, Representative Wisnick, please.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, I'll vote for the bill. I think we have to move forward. I am disappointed that after working four sessions on trying to get attention to the talent and gifted program, we're now eliminating that at the state level. I'll be watching how that works in the process. So thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Representative. Further discussion, Representative Gelser, please.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I wanted to clarify there. We have been receiving some emails about the TAG program. That's actually not encompassed in this bill. I believe that is in the bigger bill that's coming that gives districts a relief from reporting on their Division 22 standards. But this bill, I believe, does not touch the TAG program in any way. We'll have a chance to talk about that in a bill that comes at a future time.
Thank you.
And I urge and I vote. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you for the clarification, Representative. Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Wingard, do you wish to close?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, this is a difficult process to try to get people to think about giving districts more flexibility. I think it's vitally important, but it is difficult. It requires getting a lot of stakeholders together and working through lists, and people have trouble letting go of things. But with your strong support last time, and I'm hoping strong support in this session, we can continue to send a signal that we want this process to continue and that we want the education stakeholder groups to keep meeting and to keep looking at the many mandates that we have on our public education system. So I would just encourage you to join me today in sending a very strong signal that we want to repeal these, and we want the groups to keep working and bring us some more in the next legislative session. Thank you, colleagues.
Thank you, Representative. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. House Bill 4014A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Chair requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended and House Bill 4041 be taken from today's calendar and placed in its proper place on Thursday, February 16th, 2012. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 4045, relating to the public disclosure of concealed handgun license information and declaring an emergency.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 4045A. Representative Thatcher, please.
Thank you, colleagues. Seems like a little bit of deja vu, but 2009, just a little review, we passed a similar bill on the House floor, and then last year we passed an almost identical bill. And let's just hope this is the, well, the third time's the charm. Let me tell you what the bill is not, then I'll tell you what it is, and then address a couple of the objections that can seem to pop up around here. First of all, it's not a gun bill. This is a bill about protecting the privacy of confidential information of concealed handgun licenses. That's the only time gun ever enters into the conversation. The relating to clause says relating to the public disclosure of concealed handgun license information. This is all it's about, is about records and information. The bill would protect very personal information about people who are trying to exercise their Second Amendment rights. This bill will ensure the information contained in the concealed handgun license applications remain confidential and is not released to the public. There are three exceptions. One is under a court order for criminal justice purposes, and then the other one is for if the CHL holder specifically allows the information to be released. Now, we work closely with various state agencies to ensure that there is no fiscal impact. And some of the objections that I hear floating around a lot go a little like this. You might hear that it's sufficient and better if we just add these an exemption to the public records statute for concealed handgun licenses and their holders. But I want to tell you, there is a very specific reason why this bill was drafted the way it was. It is an outright prohibition on disclosure. It's because even if you have an exemption in the public records law, there is no guarantee that that information will be protected. Here's what legislative counsel said. Quote, the public records laws describe the information to which members of the public have a right to inspect. If something is exempt from public disclosure, that means the public is not entitled to inspect the record. It does not necessarily mean that agencies are prohibited from disclosing the record. And that is basically what the Oregon Supreme Court held as well. In a nutshell, this bill prohibits almost all public bodies in Oregon from disclosing information except under a few circumstances. And on the other hand, a public records exemption does not prohibit disclosure of information. The other objection that I hear a lot is goes a little like this. We need to keep these records open so that we can keep an eye on sheriffs and make sure that they are properly giving out these CHLs. Well, I believe that has no merit, and here's why. There's nothing in this bill that prevents the processes already in place. I believe there are already mechanisms in place which allow other agencies like the state police, the attorney general, probably various and sundry federal agencies to come in and look at a sheriff that they believe might be incorrectly or improperly giving out concealed handgun licenses and ensuring that the sheriffs continue to do their job the correct way. We all want that. But then you hear opponents say things like, well, I need to know if somebody's carrying. I need to know if my crazy neighbor's carrying a gun. I need to know if my, you know, stalker's carrying. This is nonsense, because first of all, just because one has a concealed handgun license, it doesn't necessarily mean they have a gun. Yeah, there's probably a high likelihood that they would, but criminals and those bent on causing harm to others are probably not going to go through the hoops that are involved in obtaining a concealed handgun license. And you don't have to have a concealed handgun license to own a whole room full of guns legally. So that is useless information. Whether somebody has or does not have a CHL does not tell you anything other than they have a CHL. And because it is such a politically charged subject matter, that information alone, naming somebody that they have a CHL, can cause some harm to people. The people with the CHLs are not the people you have to worry about. And frequently, opponents of guns in general try to blur the argument between criminals who have guns and commit crimes and those citizens who are trying to lawfully exercise their rights. These criminals, on the other hand, are the people you need to worry about, not the CHL holders. And I'm just asking you to please support this bill. It's common sense. Let's send it on over to the Senate. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Is there any further discussion? Representative Tomei, please.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Question to the carrier?
Question to the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
As long as it's from that list of questions you so kindly provided me ahead of time.
She does.
I didn't give you the questions ahead of time. I'm sorry. So my question is, would I be able to find out if my granddaughter's teacher is carrying a concealed weapon?
If there is a concern that somebody is illegally carrying a weapon, you could get a court order and find out. If somebody has a CHL, doesn't mean they're carrying a weapon, first of all. And if they have a CHL, like I said, it's too common where people blur the criminals in with those who are lawfully carrying a gun. And I don't believe that it would be even germane to find out whether that teacher has a concealed handgun license or not.
I'm still not
Representative Tomei, do you wish to...
Clarification, please?
Yes, does the carrier yield?
Yes.
So I'm still not sure what the answer is. So if I'm wondering if my granddaughter's teacher has a concealed weapon permit, would I be able to get that information?
There are three exemptions under a court order for criminal justice purposes, and if that teacher wants to reveal herself as a holder of a concealed handgun license.
Follow up?
Question for the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
Yes.
Thank you. So unless I go to court, I would not be able to find out if my granddaughter's teacher has a concealed gun permit. Is that correct?
That would be basically correct.
Thank
just
you.
Because somebody has a CHL doesn't mean they have a gun on them.
Got that. Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Representative. Further discussion? Representative Jefferson Smith, please.
Question to the carrier.
Question to the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
Yes.
She does?
Forgive me not getting the question in advance. If the bill fails, would I be able to find out if a teacher were carrying a handgun without a lawful license?
If the law doesn't pass, you can ask the holder or the custodian of the records, which I believe are the sheriffs. And currently they are not allowing that information to be released. However, that could be challenged in court because there's no statutory backup to allow them to continue doing that.
Question of the carrier.
Question of the carrier, does the carrier yield?
Sure.
Let me try to clarify a question. Without the bill, if a teacher does not have a conceal and carry permit, but is carrying a weapon, do I have any way to know that? I think the answer is no.
You would not be able clarify. Yeah, people carry weapons illegally all the time, and you would not be able to find out about them carrying a concealed, whether they have a permit.
Thank you, Representative. Further discussion? Representative Freeman, please.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
There seems to be just a little bit of confusion about this bill, and I'll use myself as a case study. I've had a concealed handgun permit for over 12 years. Not every day do I have a gun with me. This bill doesn't say anything other than the information about who has permits is public. That's all we're talking about. It's not about who has a gun with them, and it's not about people illegally carrying guns. It's about the disclosure of information, and I think we need to focus on the narrow scope of this bill. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Representative. Further discussion? Representative Hoyle, please.
I believe that we as a state and the government have a responsibility to protect the privacy of our citizens. And right now under this bill, the people that need to have access to this information do, law enforcement and the judiciary. I think we need to hold ourselves to a higher standard, whether it be CHL holders or public employee retirees or people's personal emails. We as the government should be very, very careful about who we allow to have access to people's private information. So because I want to be consistent, I am urging a yes vote. I think this is a good bill.
Thank you, Representative. Further discussion. Representative Daugherty, please. Representative Daugherty, please.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would like to echo what Representative Hoyle has. I'm not that keen on people carrying weapons, whether it be in public or in their homes, but this is a matter of privacy, and I want to echo again, if it's PERS retiree members, who are a lot of my retired folks in King City, that is kind of a hotbed for scams. Whether it is getting personal emails that I get letters from and emails from constituents saying, why does this person have it? It is a matter of privacy. And even though I may disagree with what the privacy is, I'm not going to disagree with somebody's right to their privacy. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Further discussion, Representative Barker, please.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
This bill came through the Judiciary Committee. And we were told that the bill had to have the -9 amendments, which changed where it sat in the public records law, or the Senate wouldn't consider it. When we sent this bill over to the Senate in 2009, it did have that in it, and they still refused to bring it to the floor. So did they really want the bill to have that amendment, or are they just playing games? Law-abiding citizens deserve to have their privacy protected. Law-abiding citizens who go through a background check, take classes, and an actual shooting qualification are not the problem. They're not the gangbangers in Portland. They're not the criminal element who, by the way, are already carrying their weapons concealed illegally. These are your friends, your neighbors, who for whatever reason have decided they want to be able to carry a weapon for personal protection, and they deserve the right to have their privacy protected. This is not about who has guns in their home. A concealed handgun license doesn't tell you if someone has a firearm or not, and you can have lots of guns in your home, as a good representative from Kaiser already said, and it's not against the law. This is not about who has guns in their home. We have sent various versions of this bill over to the Senate at least two other times, and a few people have decided that they cannot allow their fellow senators to vote on the bill. And I'm growing weary of reading in the newspaper that Democrats are holding up this legislation. A few people are holding up this legislation, not the Democrats. There's a group in Oregon of Oregon Democrats called the Blue Steel Group Democrats that are proud supporters of the Second Amendment. I'm a Democrat and I support the Second Amendment, and I know I'm not alone. I enjoy target shooting, I enjoy hunting, and I've recently worked on my proficiency by taking a multi-day course under the nationally renowned firearms instructor Clint Smith at Thunder Ranch in Lakeview, Oregon. That class had people from all over the country that had to pass a background check before they were able to take the class. Once again, law-abiding citizens, the kind of people who are responsible, the kind of people we're talking about who have Oregon CHLs.
What about you?
I was annoyed when I saw a senator announce the other day that all gun bills were dead for the 2012 session. The old "do what I command or I'll kill all your bills" has no place in this Oregon state capitol. Should we retaliate and kill all the Senate bills coming this way? I hope we wouldn't even entertain that thought. Bills should have the chance to be heard and voted on. This bill, or various versions of it, have come out of the House with a comfortable majority of support, only to be killed by a few people in the Senate. I'm not demanding the Senate pass the bill, but I am asking that the Senate be allowed to vote on it. This bill has been wandering in the desert for what seems like 40 years. If I may paraphrase Moses when I asked the Senate president rather than the Pharaoh, "Mr. President, let my bill go." It's a good bill, and more importantly, it's a bill that supports good Oregonians. Let us pass this bill and send it over to the Senate with the hope that the Senate leadership will allow the members of that august body a chance to finally vote on this bill that is very important to thousands of law-abiding Oregonians. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Representative. Any further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Thatcher, do you wish to close?
Just quickly, thank you. I just want to share with you a little story about a constituent that called my office. She says she is now too afraid to even get a concealed handgun license because she doesn't want her stalker to go down to the sheriff's office and get what she called a roadmap to find her. She said it would feel like she just gave her attacker a roadmap to find her. And here's what she wrote in her testimony to the House Judiciary Committee. I'll just close with this. Disclosure of identifying information about the citizen holder, a citizen applicant of a concealed handgun license, defeats the purpose of concealment. It shifts the focus from oversight of government performance to use of the public records law as a tool to gather and use personal, private information for non-governmental uses. This is about records and information, not about guns. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. House Bill 4045, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 4111, relating to sale of real property to enforce lien for local improvements and declaring an emergency.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 4111A. Representative Widener, please.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To that bill.
Colleagues, House Bill 4111 comes to you from the General House Government and Consumer Protection Committee on a unanimous vote. The bill changes existing law relating to lien foreclosures of local improvement district assessments. When a local improvement district is formed by a local government, property owners in the area are assessed a portion of the local project costs to make improvements. The amount of the assessment is a lien on the property. In most cases, the amount of the assessment is in the thousands or tens of thousands of dollars. If the property owner cannot pay the assessment, the local government can foreclose the lien and force a sale of the property. Under current Oregon law,
local government foreclosing the lien cannot accept a bid that exceeds the amount of the lien. Let me repeat that. Local government foreclosing the lien cannot accept a bid that exceeds the amount of the lien. This means that the property owner with substantial equity in their home can lose their home and all their equity simply because they cannot afford to pay the assessment for the local improvement that was forced upon them by a local improvement district. The committee heard an example of an elderly brother and sister who had owned their home in Eugene. For decades, they owned this property for decades and owned the home free and clear of any debt. The city of Eugene made improvements to the sewer in front of the home and assessed the brother and sister a fee of $7,000 for the amount of the assessment. The brother and sister lived on modest income they received from Social Security and could not pay the $7,000 which the city assessed on their property for nearby sewer improvements. Consequently, the city foreclosed on the lien and took the brother and sister's property. At the foreclosure sale, the city was prohibited by Oregon law from accepting a bid higher than $7,000. A person bid $7,000 at the foreclosure sale, took the property, and evicted the brother and sister who lost their home they had owned for decades. House Bill 4111 fixes the problem and ensures that property will not be sold at foreclosure sale unless fair bid is received for the property. The amount of revenue generated above that owed to the county or city will go to the original property owner so they can use this residual income to improve their situation. This helps Oregonians keep a portion of what they have worked to obtain and gives them their justified return on their property investment during these tough economic times. This bill also includes a section to correct a problem that was troubling to county clerks and title companies and which also had no opposition. This bill has no opposition and much support and deserves a unanimous yes vote off this floor. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Further discussion? Representative Schaffler, please.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Question to the carrier, please.
Question to the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
Yes.
He does.
And thank you, Representative. And I'm sorry I didn't get this to you earlier. And I agree folks should be able to sell their property at a greater amount than the assessment. But what happens if there is not a buyer at the minimum sales price based on these specified factors? What if no one will buy at that price? What happens then?
Is what would happen, they would actually have to go through the bid process or the go out and have another sale. But we've set it up to where it's 75% of the taxed assessed value. This is where the cities help them jump on board with the property. We made it pretty flexible to where it should sell the first time they go around, but cities do not want to be in the business of owning property. So is what would happen is it basically to go like a foreclosure or like a sheriff's foreclosure on a property. It's going off the standard ORS that a sheriff's foreclosure would work on, essentially.
Thank you, Representative. Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Widener, do you wish to close?
No.
Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. House Bill, not yet. Representative Olson, how do you vote? Olson votes aye. Representative Wingard votes aye. House Bill 4111, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Other business now? There we are. Oh. Final readings of memorials and resolutions. Where am I here? Bills, reports, other business lying on the table. First reading of Senate bills.
Senate Bill 1580, related to health care delivery and declaring an emergency.
Senate bills read for the first time are passed the co-speaker's desk for referral. Second reading of Senate bills. Third reading of Senate bills. Other business of the House. Other business of the Senate. Orders of the day have been completed. Announcements. Representative Greenlick, please.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just a reminder to the Health Care Committee, we meet at 1:30 today rather than at 1 o'clock.
Thank you, Representative. Further announcements? Seeing none. Remonstrances. Representative Conger, please. If you can negotiate, Representative Berger, space to...
I see my time is ticking, so I'll get right to it. Colleagues, this session I introduced House Bill 4104, the School Savings Act. Had it passed, the School Savings Act would have saved Oregon schools more than $200 million each year, or about $2 billion over the next decade. The mechanism to accomplish this was a set of what I consider reasonable actuarial reforms to the PERS system. Many bills did not pass this session, and we all understand why, but the School Savings Act didn't even get a hearing. Someone actually asked me, why do you want to introduce something as complicated as PERS reform, as controversial in a short session? Why would you rock the boat? Why would I? I don't remember anyone who sent me to Salem telling me, be sure now that you're there not to take on the hard problems that this state faces. Avoid the challenging issues and stick to the easy ones because that's what we really need in this state. I don't remember that. Do you? I think Oregon is crying out right now for leadership. They're looking to us to do something about the issues we all know are confronting this state. Jobs, health care, and yes, education. Why am I talking about this today during remonstrance? Because the problem is not going away. In fact, it's getting worse. But one biennium ago, the school's contribution to the PERS fund was about $300 million. This last biennium, it was $700 million. And guess what? In the next biennium, it's going to go up again. I'm not saying this is easy. I'm not saying that PERS has not been politicized. We know it has. I'm not saying it's not complex. Well, what I am saying is, what are we here for if not to address this very kind of issue? I am looking to you, colleagues, especially those who control the process here, to commit to me, as I am committed, to work on this in the interim. The problem is not going away. I think there are solutions that we can agree on in a bipartisan fashion, and I am asking you to work with me, to commit, to deal with this problem, and to come back in 2013 with a solution that we can pass.
Thank you, Representative. Further remonstrances? Representative Schaffler, please.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm going to change my bill my vote on that last bill after a good explanation, but I find it interesting that we're spending a lot of time helping people that are foreclosing on their house because they've lost their job. Guess what, folks? What's the solution to that? It ain't what we just did. The solution is make sure they have a job so they can keep their home and feed themselves and clothe their children and send them to school and have dignity. Now, two bills passed out of committees yesterday. One's relating to water in Columbia, one's relating to timber. We're talking about thousands of jobs. Oregonians who are willing and ready to go to work will benefit from this. And God knows how many millions of dollars, in the long run, billions of dollars of revenue. You know, in 10 years, we'll still be here arguing about education and health care. Be the same argument. But in 10 years, we can have those jobs up and running, and we won't have to come down here and bail people out, the poor souls that lost their jobs, and then lost their homes. And we'll be able to honor our contracts to our workers because we'll have the revenue to pay it. So I urge we stay resolute, continue to stay strong, and walk out of here, everybody a winner, voting for jobs bills and health care and education reform. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative. Further remonstrances. Representative Johnson, please.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just to piggyback on my colleague's comments from Happy Valley, yesterday was a historic day. Not only was it February the 14th, 2012, I believe Oregon's 153rd birthday, if you will, but I believe it was the first day that this chamber actually took their responsibility seriously, and we passed some bills that will create jobs in the state of Oregon. And I just want to focus on a few of the benefits of House Bill 4098, which passed your House Agricultural Committee unanimously. This bill calls basically just for the sustainable harvest, only 85% of the sustainable harvest allowable under the Forest Practices Act on state-owned forest land. If we can follow through and pass this bill, it's projected to create over 2,100 jobs, many of in rural Oregon. It'll generate an additional $33 million in new tax revenue over 5 years, and the multiplier effect of this is an additional $441 million in private sector personal income growth over the next 5 years. We had some powerful testimony on behalf of this bill from natural resource individuals, but for me, the most powerful testimony was from a representative from Oregon School Board Association that said, in this era, in this season of education reform, the best thing we can do to help kids learn is make sure that his or her parent has a job, because they're going to get to school. They're going to get to school with a full stomach. They're going to have somebody there to watch them, make sure they do their homework. It's going to provide stability on the home front. Colleagues, this is a huge step forward. We have a huge opportunity in front of us. We've got to take our responsibility serious and do everything we can do to manage our natural resources in a sustainable fashion, to ensure that there are resources there to teach kids, provide quality health care, and provide for the infrastructure of this state. So thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Representative. Further remonstrances, Representative Freeman, please.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would request that we could return to the order of announcements.
Representative Freeman moves to return to the order of announcements. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Representative?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would request unanimous consent that we allow Representative Schaffler to change his vote on House Bill 4111.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Freeman moves the rules be suspended and that Representative Schaffler be allowed to change his vote on House Bill 4111. It will not change the outcome. Is there any objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Representative Schaffler, how do you vote?
I vote aye.
Thank Schaffler. You. Schaffler votes aye. Further return to order of remonstrances. Representative Hunt, please.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. As long as we're talking about key jobs and economic development priorities, I just wanted to jump on the end of my colleague from Hood River in reminding us that there is another great jobs bill that came out of the Economic Development and Transportation Committee, House Bill 4028, which would, there's a lot of debate about some of these jobs bills about whether they'd create long-term jobs or short-term jobs. It's really abundantly clear on House Bill 4028 that as it would provide additional $10 million for Connect Oregon, an additional $10 million for the Special Public Works Fund specifically to help build sewer and water projects across Oregon, and an additional $9.6 million, actually not an additional, a first $9.6 million to provide some funding specifically for workforce development projects at community colleges, all 17 campuses across Oregon. So House Bill 4028 came out of the Transportation Economic Development Committee unanimously. It is down and pending in Ways and Means, and I would just urge you, Mr. Speaker, and all of our colleagues to expeditiously act on that, because that is one bill that we know for sure will create lots of jobs and lots of economic development benefit across Oregon.
Thank you, Representative. Further remonstrances? Seeing none, adjournment. Colleagues, before we make the motion to adjourn, just to note, we'll be starting a little earlier tomorrow, 10:30 a.m. tomorrow. We're also keeping tomorrow afternoon open as a possible floor session to keep bills moving through the process. Probably around 4 p.m., the clerk informs me. So, Representative Jensen, with that, may we have a motion for adjournment for 10:30 a.m. Thursday, February 16th of 2012.
Mr. Speaker, I move the House adjourn until 10:30 a.m. Thursday, February 16th, 2012.
Thank you, Representative. Without objection, the House is adjourned.